And now, from the Fortress of Solitude, deep beneath the super-secret underground bunker at World Headquarters, sci-fi4me.com presents The Rogues Gallery.
Welcome, everyone, this episode of The Rogues Gallery, wherein we talk about the DC Comics television and movies. My name is Jason Hunt. I'm the editor here at sci-fi4me.com. Joining me here in the studio, Mr. Dustin Adair.
Hello.
Mr. Kendall Sin.
Hello.
And across the interwaves, we've got in Corpus Christi, Texas, Sonia Rodriguez.
Hello.
And Catherine Sanders, all the way out in St. Louis.
Hello.
In Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Ann Labs.
Good evening.
And across town, Mr. Timothy Harvey.
Hello there.
And a special guest here at the round table. Trinaya is joining us tonight because she wants to talk about Supergirl. So we are going to start there this week. The episode Fight
four?
Club.
Yeah. Episode 4.
We don't talk about Fight Club, but we're going to talk about Fight Club.
Yeah.
Supergirl's Fight Club.
Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, Trinaya.
Hi.
Welcome. So,
Trinaya is by far the cutest person at our table.
Yes.
Well, I don't know about that.
Possibly, possibly in this county.
Yeah. I've
seen you all, and yeah, I think that she probably is.
Yeah. I am adorable.
You are adorable.
But yes, she is cute.
Yes, yes. All right, so Trinaya, let's start a little bit with just a basic breakdown of the episode. We've got the introduction in the Berlanti verse of Roulette and the Meta Brawl, which we saw in Justice League Unlimited, the animated thing. Deshaun Lachman, is that how she pronounces her name?
It doesn't matter.
Daisy Johnson's mom from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has crossed over into the DC universe playing Roulette, who is in charge of the high-stakes gambling, and they fight. The basic episode. So
no, you fight.
Yeah,
and it happened really abruptly.
A little bit.
It's just like, hey, I stumbled onto something. Check this out. There's the mayor. There's this. Here's everyone who's important.
And now it's gone completely. I hope that this is the set. Unlike the Wonder Woman thing, the President Wonder Woman thing. I hope this is the setup of an arc because
I think it would be
as creepy as I find her face, and I have found her face creepy since she was cast on Dollhouse. I like her a lot. I can never say her name correctly, so I don't even try anymore.
Right.
I really like that actress, and every time she's on one of my genre shows, I'm very excited to see her.
Yeah, Trinaya, what'd you think about this episode?
I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, what'd you like about it?
I liked how the Fight Club started and how the woman, she had tattoos on her shoulder and stuff. And it's just so good.
Yeah.
Now, I got to give kudos to the makeup department because you put a side-by-side, the animated Roulette and the live-action Roulette. Pretty much the only difference was the navel wasn't cut out of the dress in the live action. They got so close. I don't think they could have cast anybody to match as close as they did. I think it was good.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Everyone's looking at me.
Well,
I'm basking in adorableness right now. So
from a costuming standpoint. To do a peekaboo cutout like that, just right in the middle of a dress, especially one as form-fitting as that would have created a bunching, a seam bunch right there. They would have had to create the panel would have to have been so structured.
Which is why you can do it in an animated show.
Where I mean, look at the way, I mean, costumes in comic books are always going to not really, really work.
Yeah.
I mean, just the latex alone you would need.
But I was just saying, as close as they got, it was an admirable effort because it was as good a match as you're going to get in live action. So, we had a little bit more on the arc between John Jones and McGann Morris. The fight between the two Martians. What do you think of that, Trinaya?
I thought it was awesome because I didn't really think that they was actually going to really fight.
Yeah. So it surprised you that they actually went through with it and fighting to the death, right?
Yeah. But then at the end, they just decided they're not going to do it.
What did you think of Draga?
I thought she was pretty good.
No, that's the big monster.
The big ugly alien.
Oh, the...
Yeah, Draga.
Okay.
That scary alien.
The one that Supergirl had to fight. See, I love that Jon Jones, this immortal alien warrior who's been around, you know, for hundreds of years, had to fight a tiny little woman, and Supergirl had to fight a 6-foot, 7-foot tall gladiator monster from another planet.
Well, you know, Draga comes from the animated series as well, and he was in the episode War World, where Superman was off planet.
And what's his name?
They mentioned the War World.
The guy who's pretending to be a royal guard that's going to actually turn out to be the prince.
Mon-El?
He mentioned War World.
Mm-hmm. That was a nice little wink.
That's what's going to happen.
Oh, you think? Oh, okay.
Because he told his backstory, and he's like, oh, I was totally the palace guard, and I protected the prince, and he was like, oh, you go, you totally take
the one that stayed behind, he sat there and he goes, these are my people, and it was something that you would expect somebody.
I am calling Bullpucky on the whole story. He's going to end up. It's going to reveal that he is the prince. He's the prince of the world, because like the way that when they talked about the prince after that, and he was like, "Oh, he's the frat boy of the universe" or whatever, right. And he was just like, "He wasn't that bad. He was good."
Well, I still think he's just kind of sticking up.
Drink. I mean, that was pure frat boy
that
behavior.
Was perfect.
Now, a lot of there, I've seen some chatter online, some frustration at this particular version of Mon-El, because Mon-El in the comic books has not been the frat boy of the universe like this.
Hold on.
Not anywhere.
Hang on. Mon-El is a character that DC has. Mon-El is the Superman family version of Hawkman in the DC comic book world. Okay, they don't know what to do with Mon-El. Yeah. They haven't been able to know what to do with Mon-El ever since they started rebooting the Legion of Superheroes.
That is true.
Mon-El has not been a consistent character for about the last 25 years.
I don't know who this person is.
Maybe that's why he's on the show, so they could do something.
Didn't he have a purple outfit?
This could be
at one point in the 80s.
Giving a visual
my pages might have been faded.
Mon-El could actually be a really good thing, because the comic books seriously have not been able to figure out what to do with him. He's been a Daxamite. He's been a Daxamite throughout everything, but you know what his origin story was, how he came to be wherever he was. I mean, it's like the you know, the Hawkman or the Wonder Girl. Once Crisis hit, that's how far back it goes. It's Crisis on Infinite Earth. Once that hit, they had no idea what to do with the character. So
anything they do
is completely canon at this point.
You like him because of the bromance.
Cool.
I thought that was hilarious. I want everyone on this show to be in a love triangle. I want everyone on the show to have a love triangle.
I just turned it off at that point. I was like, seriously, every character has a boyfriend or girlfriend. You know, it's just like every single one. And I'm like,
I can see something.
Give me something for the straight men in the audience. Give me something besides.
I can see.
#MaggieAndAlex. Hello,
Kara and Mon-El.
Maggie and Alex.
Well, you see, and I've got issues with that too, because it's forced.
This is kind of lame.
It's because, well, who do we have left? Oh, Alex. Let's let's hook her up with Maggie. We're not introducing Kate Kane. We're not getting that part of the story that we get with Maggie Sawyer. When you get Maggie Sawyer, Kate's supposed to come with her.
Mm-hmm.
Because Maggie Sawyer has been a character
I know
in DC Comics since the 80s, and she has just because at this point in her history she is with Kate Kane does not mean that that's all she has been. She's been like
I mean, she was married and had a kid.
And, like, you know, she had her own title in NPD or something.
Something, yeah.
She had her own title for, like, 12 years.
But see, you're making my point for me. Maggie Sawyer is much more than just the lesbian. And right now, that's how they're playing her.
I'm 100% agreement on this, and it was just annoying to me because they're doing this on every show.
She happens to be a cop, but the biggest thing about the character, what they're putting front and center out there in front, is the fact that she's a lesbian.
Well, okay, I will admit that it's very clumsy. It's becoming very clumsy. They promised that when they moved to CW that one of the characters was going to come out. One of the main characters was going to come out.
Right, and Alex is the only one left.
I would have accepted Wynn as bisexual. I would have accepted John as bisexual because he's an alien. Aliens don't necessarily –
They'll mind meld with anybody.
Right. So I think Alex is fine. I wish they would – I will agree. I wish they would take a little more time. Like the puppy dog eyes Alex gives Maggie at the end of every single episode is a little too much.
They handled it very juvenile. I don't have a problem with it other than how it's handled.
I'm currently rewatching season 4 of Buffy the Vampire Slayer at the same time I'm watching this show. Well, I've been watching it. I'm doing a rewatch of several shows, but Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 4. It's the first college year. It's the year Willow meets Tara.
Mm-hmm.
And that realization, that coming to terms with sexuality part of that story is probably the best one ever written.
It's handled amazingly, and you have to give it up for the performance simply because you actually saw it in her where it was just like, she didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she didn't know she had these feelings.
And I feel like the way they're doing it with Alex is a little clumsy.
But yeah, like you're saying, Buffy, it was handled maturely. Mm-hmm. It was actually handled by, I feel like, somebody who actually went through that. Now it's a different – obviously it's a different day and age. And it and you know, back then when Buffy came out and stuff like that, I mean, it wasn't as prominent as it is now. Mm-hmm. Now it's one of those things where – I mean, my niece, you know, can say it's just like, I'm gay, and we're like, all right, you know. But back then, it was kind of so. It's like, you actually had people writing the show who went through that.
Yeah. Well, and just to be clear, the fact that Maggie's a lesbian is not even really a big deal. The fact that they're focusing so much
on it,
hand of the writer on that, and not giving her a good story. Because the whole hey, Danvers, come here, I've got a fight club you can take a look at. All of that could have been done the exact same way without the subtext.
The 2-minute introduction of you look nice. No, yeah. You look nice. Yeah. No.
Right.
And that dress looks nice.
And last week it was, oh, I like your motorcycle.
Right.
Like, come on.
What do you
really
think? What do you think of Alex and Maggie Trenaya?
I think they can be a couple.
You think they can be a couple? You'd be okay with it?
Yeah.
Do you think that it's moving too fast? Do you think maybe they should take it slow?
Yeah.
And maybe get to know each other a little better.
What do you think about Mon-El and Wynn? You think they're going to be best friends, or do you think they're going to end up hating each other?
Best friends. Yeah.
What did you think of the whole bar scene that they went and had drinks and stuff? You told me a little bit about this earlier.
I didn't like it.
Why?
Because I don't know if this actually happened, but I think I saw Mon-El punching somebody else.
Got into a bit of a skirmish.
Yeah, he got into a little fight.
Broke a guy's arm wrestling.
That was an accident, and he didn't throw the first punch.
That's true.
So that's very true.
Yeah.
We got to give him his.
It wasn't his fault.
He's figuring himself out.
Yeah,
he's figuring.
He hadn't had years and years to develop these superpowers.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he's thrown into this as a what? How old is he? How old is Mon-El supposed to be?
Mid-20s?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Ish?
Yeah,
he's on the CW, so he can't be older than 32.
Yeah, there's a lot of ageism over there at CW.
Linda Carter had to pretend she was 25. You know,
like, okay, well, we'll throw an homage, but you're one episode
it's like
now.
The opposite, it's like the opposite of when my boyfriend was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. It's like at 21, it's like, well, this is the exact worst time in your life you could have got it.
Yeah.
So, like, it's the exact worst time Mon-El could have gotten his powers because he just wants to, you know, have fun and get over the trauma of watching this, you know.
Whole planet be destroyed.
Which we haven't really seen him do a whole lot of.
Yeah, he hasn't come to grips with that yet. Do you think he's in denial? Or you think it's just something they just haven't.
Oh, I think it's just horrible writing.
You think it's
bad? Yeah, I think it's bad writing.
Well, okay.
It's just like, we don't have time to get into this. We're not telling a drama here.
Wait. Hang on. In Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yes.
Arthur Dent is taken off of Earth, and then Earth is
destroyed.
Promptly destroyed.
That's true.
And there's a whole thing, there's a chapter, maybe like the first part of a chapter, where he's sitting in his bunk on the ship, the whatchamacallit, I can't remember what it's called. And he's trying to come to grips. He's like, why am I not sadder that the entire world was destroyed? The whole world. Everyone was destroyed. Everything I know. And he's like, nope, doesn't work. And he's like, okay, let's bring it down a little bit. My whole town. No, they were all jerks. And then he's like, okay, let's bring it down a little farther. Okay, my family, my mother and my sister. No, that's too much. Can't even think about that. That's too hard. Let's bring it back up. So
you're giving Supergirl a lot of credit in the story department.
I am explaining.
You're talking about Douglas Adams versus Supergirl.
No, I am explaining to you how it could be possible
that he's
processed. But they got to show that. They got to show that. Well, if that's how he's handling it, they have to show it.
At some point, I think they will. So
there's
will be very melodramatic.
There's a big super fight between Mon-El and Supergirl coming. Like
it's coming. It's coming.
Yeah, where they punch each other in space. Yeah. It's gonna be beautiful.
And not to mention that like it's not as even his show. So they're not gonna dedicate a whole bunch of writing to him.
Whose show is this anymore? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Is there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen over on Supergirl.
It's still the Supergirl Power Hour, but you know, there's
a lot of aliens.
Yeah, there are.
Enough to have an underground fight club, and one of them die off every now and again, and just not be a big deal.
Well, there could very well be. It could be that they're feeling things out for another spinoff because they need a show for Friday night.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Nobody's gonna take my Raven idea seriously.
Well, it doesn't tie in organically with the rest of their connected universe.
Right, and there's not any magic users yet on any of these shows. It's all technology.
Well, Constantine showed up on Arrow. He's a magic user.
Yeah, but they made, I mean.
What about, you know, a happy mix? A happy mix would be the Marvel family. If you get the Shazam family in there.
Yeah, you could.
Because that's magic and Zoo. I mean, that's a digestible magic.
The only thing is if you do
that. And that would be a fun show on the CW.
Yeah, but they've already got Supergirl. So that power
fun,
that power
that'd
set.
That'd be a fun show.
That power set, I think. They'll go for something completely different, I think, because you got Arrow. Because really, the only thing that they don't have in all of these shows, they don't have a magic supernatural.
Right, and that's why I pitched
show.
That's why I pitched Raven.
Yeah,
and I will have to say that even
or Dr. Fate,
yeah,
or Constantine, something like that.
It's going to have to be another female-led show,
Zatanna,
because of the breakdown of the show so far.
Yeah,
because they've got the Flash and Arrow dudes. Mm-hmm. They have Legends of Tomorrow team, and then they have Supergirl girl.
Yeah,
so they needed to have another female-led show.
Yeah. So they would they move boy, girl, if they boy, do girl. That. They would move Legends of Tomorrow to Friday, and put the new one on Thursday. Probably,
I will say that as problematic as I think the whole like Wynn and Mon-El being best bro buddies and going out. Mm-hmm. I love that. I'm so glad they gave Wynn a story.
Besides,
walking up with a tablet and being like, "I saw a thing on a thing," and then like,
and then makes a Star Wars reference. Yeah, and then everybody makes fun of him. Yeah.
Well,
didn't miss Jimmy Olsen so much.
I don't like Wynn at all in this new environment. I liked him fine at the newspaper at the magazine.
That's because at the newspaper he was Jimmy Olsen.
He was doing something.
I've made this point before. James Olsen that we have on Supergirl is a completely superfluous character.
Yes,
because Wynn Schott Jr.
Well, he is
fulfills that same.
He's a love interest. That's all he is.
Well, he's not even that anymore.
Not anymore. Yeah, I know. That's it is. It is. He will always be the. This will be the Luke and Laura of this show.
But if you go into the Superman slots, okay, because you're analog, Supergirl and Superman, right? at season one, Kat was Perry White.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Snapper Carr is Perry White. Jimmy's not even Perry White. When is Jimmy Olsen?
Just too many characters. There's just too many characters to give face time to and develop their character. And there's just too much. I mean, you don't have time to dedicate. I mean, it's kind of sad. I mean, they brushed off in one episode, which I'm thankful for, because that was like my fear of this show, that it was going to become a relationship show where it was just going to be all about if Supergirl was going to find love, you know.
CW.
And I was just like, and I was just like, that's great. But it was handled so...
It was a little clumsy.
Rushed?
Yeah.
Where it was just kind of like, oh, we're not a thing anymore. All right, I agree. We shouldn't be a thing. See you later. I'm your boss now.
Trinai, what do you think about Snapper? Kara's new boss.
The reporter guy. The guy she brings stories to.
I like him.
I don't like him.
You know? Why not?
Because... the one who Supergirl has to bring
the story, her boss.
Okay, I don't like him because he judges her on how she wants to write her stories.
But she's not writing it correctly, if he's trying to teach her. What if he's just trying to teach her?
I know, but she is doing her best.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay.
What do you think about how many characters are on the show? Are there too many characters, or not? Or are we good with the characters we have?
Good.
No. So you think everybody's going to have plenty of time to tell whatever story they need to tell?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Okay.
Until we get to a crossover, and they're all going to have to go...
Oh, yeah, the crossover episode.
Once we get to the crossover fantastic. Where it's all superheroes, and it's like, where are all these other characters that we've had to develop?
Well, we haven't heard very much. Speaking of all too many cooks and characters and whatnot, we haven't heard from very many of our other people here on this. So, Tim, Sonia, Anne, Catherine, jump in here. What do you guys think about this episode? Those who saw it,
I enjoyed it. I like the fact that we're already in the comic book. It took quite a while to let it be known that McGann was a white Martian, so it's nice that we're pretty much like, oh, here she is, and oh, here she is. So I enjoyed that. The fact that we're not, you know, they're not going to drag that out. I think in this context, it works better to go ahead and make it something that happens sooner rather than later. So I enjoyed the episode. I mean, it's. There was kind of a lot crammed into it. I think but other than that, I mean, it's a little busy, but
a little bit.
Overall, I enjoyed it.
It was just a lot of stuff. I mean, there was just there was a lot of aliens. There was a lot going on in this episode, and I just don't feel like any of it had any time to breathe, and I just didn't care.
You think it would have worked better as a two-parter?
I think it would have worked better as a season-long arc, like figuring out, you know, what is I want these shows to start putting a little bit of darn mystery into it. You know what I mean? Like give me something. Like, we're working towards something. Does anybody feel like we are working towards anything in this season of Supergirl?
I think it's a rebuilding year because they just changed.
You don't get that. Get a rebuilding year in television.
They have to do that.
They don't get it though. You're not allowed that.
Look at it. You have to look at it.
I don't need it.
Yeah, personally. I mean, it's like
I don't need it.
Their ratings are, you know, I mean, obviously their ratings are going to be lower than they are on CBS because less people still in this day and age don't understand that there's another network. But anyway, so they're not trying to build the only people that are watching it are people that followed it from CBS.
Well, and it could very well be that it's not a reboot, rebuilding season for the audience so much as it is for the suits.
I would say
the showrunners are the same.
Yeah, but the network's different. The suits, the people in charge are different.
I think there might be also, this is only episode 4.
Yeah.
They're putting pieces in place. We've got Roulette, we've got
to be fair, they gave up their first two episodes to introduce Superman.
To be fair, they had to do that for the ratings.
But they're not. Yeah, to get eyes
Kat,
on the two
and to get Kat gone. Yeah. You had to basically reset the board in those two episodes.
Okay, so what did episode three do?
Well, you've got the establishment of the.
Besides, guys, we make a lot of fun of Gotham for being ridiculous.
You've got the Alien Amnesty Act, which is now going to explain why now we have more aliens
showing up, coming out of the shadows.
And two, we have
Mon-El.
Boring.
We have Mon-El waking up. We have
boring.
We have the president being revealed as an alien. That's going to come back. That'll come. And then this, like you said, in this episode.
This show is going to take a real, I think it's going to start taking a real interesting look at refugees and what it means to come to a new country.
Based on these last two episodes, I don't trust how they're going to work that.
Well, it's early yet.
I mean, they don't. They can't really figure out how to.
Yeah, but they really did have to do a lot of resetting, and I think they're still recovering
and
from that.
Throwing more alien. I mean, there's so many characters. So many characters.
Well, there's not any more. There's not any more primary characters than there were last year.
Let's see.
It's the same number.
Well, yeah, technically. Go ahead.
I want to stop Kendall talking, and I want to say that I was so disappointed, although we did get that great at the after Kara left, the great Lena Luthor stares off in the middle of the distance in an evil way. Uh-huh. I would have much rathered when she said, "I think I know where I can find out where Roulette's next fight club is. I've got a source," and she runs off. I was so hoping that she was going to Maxwell Lord.
You know, I'm wondering what's happening to Maxwell.
Because
where is he?
I would have thought that would have been the skeezy billionaire. That's like underground alien fight club is 100% his jam. This would have been the perfect episode to bring him back.
Yeah,
you're 100% right on that.
Yeah, I wonder what's going on with him. I don't know that they renewed his contract.
Oh, well.
I don't know.
Well, he's off doing something else.
I've heard. I can't remember the name.
Like 15 people on the back burner.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is some gossipy scuttlebutt, but I've heard that guy is notoriously hard to work with.
Peter Facinelli?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard from, like, I remember, I think Angela Bassett gave an interview saying that he was hard to work with on the movie they did together. Mm-hmm. I remember that the woman who played his wife on Twilight kind of alluded that she didn't particularly like working with him. So. And like
maybe this was the clean break opportunity they were looking for.
That's just like goofy TMZ scuttlebutt that I've heard. But so don't take that with as many grains of salt.
Don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody.
Nobody listens to this show.
Yeah, you're safe. You're safe here. You're safe. This is about being in the Secret Service.
All right. So last thoughts on Supergirl tonight. Anything else that you'd like to share before we move on to Gotham?
I wanted to say that I really like the change in narrative from the Miss Martian from the comics, because in the comics it's very similar to what Mon-El is here and to what Supergirl is, and that her parents didn't want her to, you know, have to be born on this blood-soaked, you know, planet because it was in the middle of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And they changed it to what it is, and I think that gives her a lot more agency in her narrative, and also it will be really interesting to see how it plays out with everyone, considering she technically wasn't an innocent bystander in all of this.
No.
Like, she broke rank, and she left, which is, like, considered biologically improbable in White Martians, so, obviously she's gonna garner some sympathy, but still, it'll be interesting when that mystery breaks to everyone else. They could really do a lot with that, especially with the change.
Some story potential there, yeah. Naya, what'd you think?
I got two things. Okay, the first thing is I like that when he got a new job, because his old job didn't. To me, it didn't fit him. But now his new job, as having the tablet thing in his hand and telling people stuff.
Because he's so good with the computers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And okay. He's on the computer sometimes, and that's just really good about him. And the second thing is, I don't like Supergirl no more.
What? You don't wait. You don't like the show, or you don't like the character?
I don't like the character.
Why not?
Because of how violent she is.
Really?
Because she was really mean to Mon-El when he first showed up, even though she had no reason to be.
Right.
And she seems to, like, jump right in. Like, first thing she does when she finds out about Alien Fight Clubs, go burn the thing to the ground.
She's not real compassionate.
Yeah, she's got some...
Well, to build on that, I think she is kind of right, is that... is this part of the rebuilding that we're talking about? Because here, let me say it as explicitly as I possibly can. And
there's
that
a child in the room.
You have one good thing about your show.
Uh-huh.
And it is this girl playing this character.
Right.
Let's focus on that. And two things. Also, I do like Hank Henshaw, but he was much better, again, when there was some mystery involved. But guys, I really feel like she's getting pushed out of the show, of her own show.
I don't get that sense.
It's like Superman getting second billing in his own sequel, you know.
Well,
you know, it's like I just feel like it's the show now is, you know, you were talking about rebuilding and redeveloping and stuff like that, but I don't think they're doing that because they would be talking about her character. If they were actually trying to get new people to watch it, they wouldn't be developing seven different people whose name isn't in the show.
Well, I think there's two things there. I think you've got the fact that it's on the CW and it's a Berlanti show. It's going to be a team show because you've got Team Flash, you've got Team Arrow, you've got the Legends of Tomorrow. It's all team.
And, you know, oh.
And the thing about Supergirl is Hank Henshaw. I don't know his last name. Mm-hmm. But,
you got it.
He, to me, I liked when last season when he was like that, because this season now he's just more
he's more of a grumpy cat.
Yeah.
Is it his ears? Is it his ears that bother you? They bother me too.
And his eyes.
His ears. The weird ear thing. You know. I mean, man, how did he not get cast in The Hobbit?
That's why they gave him John Jones. All right. So
there are no black people in Middle Earth.
All right. So
didn't you notice that?
So that's our Supergirl discussion. Here's what we'll do. We'll go ahead and take a break, reset, and refill coffee mugs. When we get back, we will talk
everything else.
Gotham, Flash, Arrow, Legends of Tomorrow, and we'll start with the Wonder Woman trailer. When the Rogues Gallery continues right after this.
We are vengeance. We are the night. We are sci-fi for me.
I'm meteorologist Brian Busby. If you're traveling to a convention this weekend, especially if you're a cosplayer, it helps to know what the weather's going to be like. Rain and fur don't mix very well now, do they? That's why every week, Sci-Fi for Me gives you the weather forecast for every city hosting a convention. Those we have on our list, anyway. And that's worldwide, not just in the United States. It's part of our commitment to bring you content you won't find anywhere else. Just click on the conventions tab over at scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Jedi, Sith, Tauntauns, no matter which side of the Force you claim, we are your go-to holocron for all the latest Star Wars news, rumors, and innuendo. Imperial Intelligence has got nothing on us. We've got your salacious crumbs every other Sunday at 6 p.m. Central U.S. exclusively on Sci-Fi for Me TV.
SciFiForMe.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse. And may the Force be with you.
Atomic Cotton, where Erica and Zach combine their passion for art and film to create wearable art. All original, made with a love for the genre. Coming to a convention near you very soon. Or find them on the web at atomiccotton.com. Atomic Cotton, shirts and art for fans by fans.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Back in the Rogues Gallery, talking the DC Comics TV and film shows. Wonder Woman. New trailer dropped this week. And I put it out on Twitter, but I'm going to throw this out here for everybody. If you will pay attention to the music, the drum line, the rhythm track on her theme at the end of the trailer is the same as the rhythm track and the opening titles for Super Friends 1973.
Sure, okay.
It is.
Wow,
it is the exact same. It's the exact same rhythm, that beat. And it's a different tempo.
I'm going to have to hear this from a professional musician to buy into that. But I do have to say, when is the soundtrack going to be released and when can I get it?
I don't know, but it sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I want it now.
The soundtrack is awesome. And I have to say that movie looks amazing.
It does.
I love that crazy guitar riff. I love
the theme song.
It's electric cello.
Oh, wow.
Thank you.
You do not yet know whether or not the soundtrack is awesome.
That's
right.
True.
No, you're 100% right. But what I'm saying is, if they keep any of that electric cello, I am going to be pretty excited.
Yeah. I really hope that it's the music is done in the style of A Knight's Tale, where it's
set, all classic rock.
It's set in a period where they should not be playing David Bowie, but yet there he is. That's what I want.
I'm not sure that would work.
No.
That might take it just a little bit too far the other way.
I don't know.
Says you.
Kind of goofy.
No, it does not look goofy at all. I mean, Chris Pine is there to be our comic relief.
The thing is, Wonder Woman.
That's what we're going to get for comic relief.
Wonder Woman has so much writing on it. You know, it's not just can it tell a good story. It's can it tell a good story and save the DC film universe.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's what's riding on this. Not only that, but also, can it, you know, besides saving the DC film universe, will it also then lead to Black Widow or whatever other female lead movies there could possibly be after this?
Behind the camera, I'm actually more interested than I am, because, you know, you can, you know, say whatever you want about female leading characters and stuff like that, and I don't really think that's an issue. The last two Star Wars movies, biggest movies each year, are going to have female leads. So I'm not really worried about that. What I'm interested in is that the director.
Yeah.
Because hey, this is a $300 million, once you factor in all the advertising and everything, that they're putting on a woman director's shoulders.
Right.
You know what I mean? You don't see that. You don't see that in Hollywood.
No.
That's pretty exciting.
The thing about it is, though, when they...
And can I say real quick, let me get this out there. It's the first DC Cinematic Universe movie not directed by Zack Snyder.
Oh, thank Jesus.
I know.
Oh, good really.
How good does it look?
Well, the thing...
We'll wait until the finished product.
Here's the thing, though. When Michelle McLaren was announced to direct this picture, well, when they first announced the Wonder Woman solo film to begin with, before there was any talent attached to it, immediately everybody's like, well, it's got to be directed by a woman. It's got to be directed by a woman. So, why?
It
needs to be directed by somebody who gets the story.
somebody who
understands the character.
Mean that a talented director who can tell that story isn't a woman necessarily.
Right. No, it doesn't mean it's not a man.
I'm not saying androgynous. Saying that the director, whoever that is, for whatever project, is just like we got with Black Panther. Well, Black Panther has to have a black director. Well, why? That kind of emphasis on the diversity and the representation is just as racist as saying you can't direct because you're black.
Well, I will say that because of the subject matter, I think that it was probably very important. And considering the fact that that Wonder Woman has been a feminist icon since before the word feminist existed, it was important that a woman be put in the helm of this film.
Yeah,
because you got your straight white maleness in there now. I'm speaking from a queer perspective. So, I mean, if one of the ladies wants to jump in and take over.
Yeah, but
I would say, okay, I do have something to say on that. With the scarcity of directing jobs that go to women, based on how many talented women there are out there,
and black
I don't
men,
think
throw Panther
I
there.
Don't think giving this job to a talented woman director is a bad thing. And I agree that it probably has a different voice, maybe not a better voice or a worse voice, but having a female director does give it a different voice. That's
and
all I'm saying.
The thing about what may seem like a diversity hire to some of us, or, you know, it's kind of the way that that affirmative action worked back in the 80s. Yeah, it rankled some people. It made some people think, why didn't this person get this job when they may have been more qualified or might have done a different job or a better job? Mm-hmm. But sometimes you have to do that to break down some of those walls. I mean, we cannot all just look at Sofia Coppola. We have to bring in some other women to give us some other voices.
I'm not arguing that point.
The point here is we don't have to give anything. They have to do it.
Because I am
a big believer of – now, don't get me wrong. This is coming from a straight white male perspective. Okay, I want to throw that out there for our listeners at home. Straight white male perspective. You got it. It doesn't matter if you're black, white, woman, male. To do anything in this business is hard.
Yeah.
And it is hard, long, long work.
Yeah.
And right now,
we've been in that. So
I've been doing this for 20 years.
Yeah.
My first sale was 18 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I've been doing this for that long, and I've been lucky enough to not have that many, you know, table waiting jobs.
And I'm not saying that having a
but it's hard work.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that having a woman director on Wonder Woman or a black director on Black Panther,
it doesn't make them
better. I'm not saying it's a bad idea.
Right.
I'm not saying it's a bad idea. But if you're making that decision purely for the politics of it rather than the creativity of it.
Yes.
Then,
I agree.
Then I think your priorities are
so,
wrong.
So but what I'm saying about good directors,
that,
I mean
The movie looks fantastic.
The movie looks fantastic. Let's look at – I mean, she did Monster.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She did some really good episodes of The Killing, you know, which I didn't watch the entire show. I'm sorry. But the point is like she's a good director. I mean,
right.
Yes, I'm thrilled that, you know, somebody's breaking through. But you know what? At some point, you know, Steven Spielberg had to break through. You know, it's like a lot of these people had to break through. Unless you're, you know, Max Landis, you know, you didn't get something just handed to you.
Max Landis might have it all taken away from him.
But he works his butt off.
Yeah.
I have never seen anybody write that much. I mean, listen to like any interview that you see with somebody who's interviewed him. And it's like, if I take a break in a question when I'm asking him, he opens up his laptop and starts writing a script. Like, he's crazy. I mean, that man is crazy. I'm not saying he's not crazy smart, but he works his butt off.
Yep.
For some people like that, though, it's easy, you know, because it's just like his brain doesn't work like the rest of ours. It just, you know. So it's more than just being a certain person. It's more than just being a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about your dedication and how your brain works. I mean,
speaking of crazy and brains working or not, let's switch over to Gotham.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm happy.
This particular episode I actually liked.
No way.
I thought it was good.
Because it was a crime episode.
It was a crime noir episode,
and it got back to what we were hoping Gotham to be at the very beginning.
Michael Chiklis got to be Michael Chiklis.
Huh?
You know, he got to have a little bit of a backbone to him. Jim Gordon was
less incompetent. No, he was actually pretty
not bad.
Fairly incompetent as usual.
You know what? And look, I'm just going to say it because I'm a sucker for father-son moments. That was an amazing little father-son moment that they had there.
Yeah, except now we've got two rings.
Yes.
Did you notice that?
Yeah.
Like, wait a minute. Yep. Where did that second ring come from?
But see, it's introducing, and that's probably one of the reasons why I'm still on the Gotham train is because, especially this season, they have introduced mystery. They have introduced as like, hey, we're not going to show you everything every single episode. We're gonna do some things. I wouldn't say I enjoy, but I like the Mad Hatter better than I like the other villains. Like, once Penguin went completely off the rails, you know, I mean, it is what it is. That whole that whole thing with him and Nigma and stuff like that. Like, I don't like it simply because I don't like watching Penguin be.
It's not true to the character.
Well, it's not really true to the character, but I can't really fault Gotham for that. They're not really true to any of these characters.
That's true.
But it's, I don't know. It's just, it's, I guess he's always been whiny. I don't know. It's just, I have started to enjoy some of the other characters again. And he's just kind of been annoying. And he's whiny. He's always been whiny, but he's just whiny. And I'm ready to move on to a new villain.
Yeah.
And I like the Mad Hatter. This episode had I loved some horror moments. I mean, Hank, the sister hanging upside down with her blood yes. being drained, that could have been a horror movie moment.
That was good.
It was very creepy.
And it baffles me to say this, but everything with Barbara Keene was fun.
That was kind of fun.
That was
yeah.
just really fun.
Yeah. yeah.
It's just like, why am I dressed like this?
Well, and it, because it wasn't really her.
Right. It wasn't her. It was all his imagination. It was yeah. all his subconscious and stuff. And he's just like, yeah, I thought it was funny.
Something I noticed last week, and I noticed it again this week, and I don't know if anybody else picked up on this, but did anybody else see that Gordon, any time Gordon is talking about the two women in his life?
Yes.
You have Lee. And you have Vale.
Mm-hmm.
He always addresses Valerie as
Vale.
Vale. He always uses her last name.
Mm-hmm.
Lee,
yeah,
of course, is
that.
Her first
yeah.
name. Look, wait a minute. If you're dating somebody, or if you're in any kind of a relationship or a friendship or any kind of something with somebody, I mean, wouldn't you use their first name at least once when you're talking
no,
about
because
somebody?
She's a placeholder girlfriend until he goes back to Lee.
This makes me nervous because every once in a while my wife calls me Sin.
Or well,
and I hate it. And I hate it when she does that because yeah, it's like, you know, there's five of us in here.
Yeah, but she doesn't do it every single time.
No,
right?
No, every single
that's
time.
That's not the only thing she calls you.
This is not. I mean, take it as you will. I do not ever say Tim when talking about Tim Harvey.
You always say Tim Harvey. You say his full name.
I always say Tim Harvey. Ever since we met, I have always said Tim Harvey. I have a cousin named David Allen, and that David Allen is his middle name. Mm. He is in his 40s. People have been calling him Dave for 20 years.
Oh, now see, now that's I think that's
David Allen.
That's more of a Southern thing because my dad is Alfred Lee to his mother, and everybody else, he's Al.
Right. But see, there, I think that depending on the person and the relationship, it's just, you know, you get stuck calling somebody something. I had a friend who everyone called, you know, Mike, and I always called Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you know.
Yeah, but you're still using first names, though.
Right. But it doesn't change the fact. Once you get used to calling somebody something, that's what you're gonna call them,
I suppose.
It's kind of like how my kids say, "Hey, you know." It's kind of
yeah.
like that. Sorry, Jason. I know you're having to that out. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Or when my kids, when I walk in, they're like, "Oh, this guy again."
So, what do you guys? I hear you guys enjoying Gotham more this season. So,
I do.
What's changed?
I mean, like I said, in our first episode when I came back, you know, it was. Expectations were
much lower,
and also there have been some good moments. I mean, there have been some good story moments this season.
Yeah,
and the atmosphere, the production value of this show is so much better than any of the other shows we talk about. The effects, they don't try to do the crazy effects, so that's
right.
The effects aren't, you know, you can't really hold it against. You can't say that the effects aren't as good, or you can't say the effects are better than Legends of Tomorrow because they don't have to travel through time. You know,
that's
it's
right.
like they gotta.
Well, the other thing too, I think for me, Gotham is still just one of those take it or leave it shows. The only reason that I'm watching is because we talk about it on the show.
Yeah. I don't know if I would continue
other,
or not.
Yeah, I don't have any other incentive to watch it. I really don't like it still. I like it better
than
so I
honest.
Did.
He just looked me right in the eyes. He was like, I just really don't like it.
I don't hate it as much as I did.
And you're fat.
Oh, God.
That's what he said with his eyes. So I don't know.
I still don't like it. It's not top of my list.
No, but yeah, I wouldn't say it's a great show by any stretch of the imagination, but it's become a lot more enjoyable. It's become a lot more fun. They've kind of embraced some elements, but they've pulled back from where they were in season two. Okay. Like they really went crazy in season two, and they've kind of pulled that back where, like you said, this was a proper detective show.
Yeah.
And there was a real interaction there between the doctor, Lee's fiance, and mm-hmm. Jim at the end and stuff Mario. Like that. Yeah, Mario. And there was a genuine
hey, it's
reaction.
Mario.
It's-a me, it's a Mario.
Well, there goes that character for me. Never be able to look at him the same again.
Just wait till. Well, we're not going to get next season, so there won't be.
There won't be another. You know, yeah. I'm just enjoying this. Yet. I'm just enjoying this while it lasts. Yeah. And I have to say that Jim Gordon has amazing hair. Can I just say he has amazing? He has an amazingly thick, full head of hair.
That's obviously your upbringing, where you have to find something nice to say about somebody, right?
Well, hey, you would like this show if he grew a mustache.
Well, I'd like it better if he grew a mustache.
And this is also the first episode in 6 weeks where he didn't say it's complicated.
That's true.
I lost the pool on that one.
I think somebody else said it. I think Kim Novak said it.
Oh yeah,
somebody Kim Novak.
Kim Novak. That's her name now.
That's her name forever. Is Kim Novak?
Yes. I think she's playing Ed. I think she's playing Nigma.
You think so?
I think she's playing him.
So, but and Cobblepot thinks mm-hmm. he's playing her.
Yeah.
So it's a three. They're, what,
and Cobblepot is playing with himself.
Cobblepot's not figuring anything out.
Okay.
And his limp is getting much more severe.
Yeah.
You know, I noticed how they're really turning him into. I just need him to put on some weight.
Yeah.
And I really hate some of his hairstyles in this episode, by the way. Wow, what is it with me and hair today? Probably because mine looks so bad today. But I mean, I know, I look bad today. Sorry, guys. Be thankful, you guys out there in listening world, both of you can't see me.
Ooh.
But it was, but no, I mean, it was just like he had that weird, like, falcon haircut. Yeah. And it was like, I was just trying to look at him, and it was weird.
Well,
ooh, and the Court of Owls. I liked all the Court of Owls stuff that they had in this one.
Yeah,
too.
I did too.
Little moments like that are stuff that I like, you know, where it's like, oh, by the way, what's your name again? And she walks away, and I'm like, that was awesome. Yeah. That was great.
Yep.
The show is having surprising moments. It's giving us something to look forward to.
I just have one tiny little thing. It's like, you know, that they pass over those cityscapes, and this week I noticed there was a tiny little gargoyle on one of the spires, and they put a lot of effort into so much of this show that too bad other parts don't match up.
Yes, yeah. The technical aspects of this show are really good.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks
production
great.
Production design and, yeah, all of that.
Some of the performances are very good. Some of them, I can't say they're bad. They're just weird.
I like the fact that the Gotham City Public Library
is dingy.
Is a tiny room. And it really looks like pretty much half of it is taken up with card catalog.
Yes. They have no electronic filing system.
And I wonder how many people are watching that show wondering, what are all those little drawers?
That's true.
Because nobody knows what those are anymore. That was a fun bit. I was like, ooh, I know what those are.
Recognize
that.
I used to organize my books by the Dewey Decimal System at my house.
Did you really?
Oh, I salute you, sir.
Yes.
All right, anything else on Gotham? We want to go over to The Flash.
I guess we can head on over to The Flash.
It was okay.
Yeah.
I would say the last, this season for me, has been okay.
No, I disagree. I like the season a lot. It was just this episode was very droll.
One
I like this
things,
better than the last one.
Well, the last two or three, the magenta one and then this one.
The magenta one, I hate.
No, I liked it, but I like the magenta one if only because they treated her so much better than they treated her in the comics.
Well,
like,
the problem that I'm having with the last few episodes is that the villain of the week, quote-unquote so-called, is a function character. Point A to point B to point C. The only reason this character is here is to get one of our lead characters from the beginning of an arc to the end of an arc. Mm-hmm. And for Magenta, it was Jesse. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to use Magenta to get Jesse into the arc and get Harrison to finally sit there and go, okay, run, Jesse, run. That was the only purpose that Magenta served. This week, we've got the Monster Kid.
That was a shockingly good Harrison Wells from Earth 2.
Yeah, well,
that was a good impersonation, Jason.
Thank you. And so the only reason that we've got this monster this week, it actually serves two purposes. One, to get Barry and Julian to make up.
To be friends.
To make nice. Yeah. And the other is to expose HR as a fraud.
Yes.
Other than that, there is no point to these villains. There's no point to the antagonists mm-hmm. in the story. They're not serving a story function. They're structural. They're not story. And that irritates me.
I totally accept your reasoning. And much like Supergirl, you know, what are we moving towards? Mm-hmm. What are we going to?
Yeah.
You know, where are we going with this? You know,
well, for the Flash, we're moving towards the reveal of who Dr. Alchemy is.
Right. Mm-hmm. Who is a fun character, and as we discussed, Tobin Bell, it's just kind of exciting. For whatever reason, I mean, for, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, an interesting dynamic between Caitlin and her mother. I like the fact. Well,
how many computers did she ruin?
Oh, a lot. You talk about where we're moving toward. What we're probably moving toward is Killer Frost emerging as the villain by mid-season.
Ah, man, I hate. One of the things that Flash is doing that, for you know, they're even aware that they're doing it, and that is that they're turning people to bad guys. You know, it's like that is something they have done through this entire show. Is just like, here's our friend, now he's a bad guy. Here's our friend, now he's a bad guy.
But see, you're like every single person in Team Flash, quote unquote. If you look at the, they were all going to end up being his villains. Every single one of them is named after a villain in Flash's rogue gallery.
Well, Vibe's not.
Vibe wasn't, was it?
Vibe was a member of the Justice League.
Vibe was always a hero.
But Killer Frost is only a villain for like a short amount of time. She's a hero in DC now.
I was kind of hoping that is she?
Caitlin Snow Killer Frost is a hero.
Well, then I mean, hey,
she's been a hero for like 15 years.
And honestly, if this entire season is developed kind of to her character's arc, this show has a different, you know, doesn't have the same problem that, you know, Supergirl has, is because we're in season 3.
Yeah.
Where they did a really great job. We can all agree that they did a great job in that first season developing these characters. They made some weird choices, but they developed them well. Mm-hmm. They have always kept the show about Barry Allen. It has always been about him, but they have always organically built the side characters. I mean, the stuff they did with Cisco was great, with his brother and all these different things. I mean, honestly, it's kind of a magic trick that they pulled, but it is funny that they are meta enough about themselves that they're like, oh, we're so good at turning people you think are good into bad, we're going to pull that trick with H.R. Wells. Mm-hmm. You know, so I thought that was really kind of funny, and I like and hate this version of Harrison Wells. I mean, it's like I love his group. I love the levity that he brings to it. Like, it's really fun. Just from an acting perspective,
acting.
Oh yeah,
he is. This has been his show.
Yeah, Kavanaugh gets to do so many different things.
He gets to have so much fun.
I have to stop us right here.
Yes,
just for one second. Can we talk about Sidekick at some point? Has everyone seen Sidekick?
Have not seen it yet.
Yeah.
Is it a DC thing?
It's a short.
Right.
This made is by
Josh Holland.
Oh yeah.
I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it.
Okay.
Never mind. We won't talk about it. That's an assignment for next week. Sidekick. And we're going to watch
Sidekick.
It.
We will lead the show next week with Sidekick. Yeah. All right. Arrow.
I'm out on this one.
Tim.
Kind of.
Arrow. Do we want to talk about Arrow? Anybody?
I don't even think Tim's here anymore.
He's here. He's just sitting.
I can tell you about the Green Arrow comic I started reading since Rebirth. That's pretty good.
For those of you who don't know, Tim isn't actually here. He just sits in his lair and strokes his cat like Dr. Evil. Like, that's what Tim does. And Tim looks like Tim looks like, is it Cain or
Hans
Abel?
Gruber.
You know, he looks Hans like Cain or Abel from DC, from House of Mystery. That's what Tim looks like. Have you ever noticed that?
I have not noticed that.
I actually, Dustin and I actually worked on a strip together where we have a character called the Bookkeeper, and it was always our dream to have Tim play this part because he looks like the Bookkeeper from House of Mystery.
Mm. Hmm.
And
he's still not
my
saying anything.
Tangent is over, so clearly he's not here.
I don't know. It was okay. It was not as bad, dumb, stupid as last week's. But it gives us one step closer to Prometheus being the terrible bad guy. It gets. I was really surprised that they killed Tobias Church.
Yeah, that was what I was thinking. I thought that was a waste.
Even though he's
thanks
not,
for the spoiler.
You walk in
it's
here.
My fault.
Yeah.
It's my fault.
But you know, even though he's not based on any character from the source material, he's original to the show. I thought he was a decent bad guy. He could be around for a while, but sadly, no. His contract was up. He's done. But it does get him out of the way for Dolph Lundgren's character to come in and be the next villain while we get our little teases.
Wait, did you just say Dolph Lundgren?
Dolph Lundgren.
I am watching next
week. He's coming in. Yep. I don't know if he's coming next week, but yeah, Dolph Lundgren.
Well, you got to some the, point the, is he going to say, I will break you?
I don't know. But that was...
I would break you.
You know, I know I watched Arrow.
Decent.
I can't remember much about
Dolph Lundgren movies.
Well, no, I know what it was. Tobias was bringing in all of the different crime lords from Bloodhaven and City and all of that. We did get a new version of the Human Target in this episode.
I read about that, but I didn't get
to see it. And we got some hints with the mention of Hub City and a couple of other elements that are in the show. We got some hints that maybe Vic Sage is in this universe, and we just haven't seen him yet. The Question. Maybe at some point, The Question will make.
There's a show that I'd like to. Now there's a show that I'd like to see.
And then the other thing we got is we got casting news this week. Lexa Doig is going to be joining the show as Talia al Ghul.
Yep.
So Arrow is stealing from Batman again.
I thought
Nyssa al Ghul has been Katrina Law's character.
All right.
Nyssa, of course, didn't exist before this show.
Yes, she did.
Did she?
Yep. She was created by Greg Rucka back in 2002.
Okay. All right. I missed that part. Talia's half sister.
And she just, why does Talia get the big bedroom? Daddy, you give Talia everything she wants.
She gets so much more time in the Lazarus pit than I do.
Why can't I go to the mall? You let Talia go to Europe and murder a dictator. Why can't I just go to the mall?
Anyway, okay, so there was Arrow. Not very memorable, but it did give us a couple of moments. And then Legends of Tomorrow gave us zombies.
You know, I enjoy the zaniness of Legends of Tomorrow. Yeah. I enjoy the just kind of madcap adventures. I especially like Brandon Routh. I like Steel. I like their interaction. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like that relationship that they have is everything that Wynn and Mon-El should have. You know, it's like, playful fun.
I wrote in a recap a couple of weeks ago. I guess it was for the season premiere. The goofballery.
Yes.
Of this show. They've completely embraced, and they've said, "Okay, this is a comic book show.
We're just going to have
all
fun.
Comic book shows,
and we're not going to get as Willy Wonka as Gotham.
Yeah, where they don't take.
But this is time travel. We can go to Japan.
Zombies in the Civil War.
Yeah,
I mean, come on. This
they're
is
just
so
having fun.
Fun.
They're just having fun. And and
like,
the
how crazy can we get it this week?
The characters I really like. I'm even warming up to. I can never remember her name.
Amaya. Vixen.
No, not Vixen, but the white.
Oh, white canary. Sarah.
Yeah. I'm finally starting to warm up to her a little bit.
Oh yeah.
I just don't like her. I don't like her character.
Okay, you don't like the character.
I don't like the character. I feel like they're. I feel like they've written her very classless. I know that's a silly thing to say, but they're just willy nilly with her. Like she's. Just cold, you know. I mean, it's just one of those things. Boy, I'm coming across
like really. League of Assassins,
right? But it's like
dead and resurrected.
I understand that.
Okay. All right.
Just, but it's just
you know where she's coming
not,
from.
Well, yeah, but I mean, here's the thing, and we talked about this before, is like you can't have your cake and eat it too. She's either that way or she's the flirt who goes through time and sleeps with everybody.
No, well, and we talked about this the first episode.
I disagree.
The first episode they did that with her. They did it as a gag, and I think it was a mistake. I read an interview with her.
That's probably why I'm saying I'm.
Yeah, Katie Lotz said that when she was going back, she went back and looked at some of the earlier episodes from the show, and she was even struck by how much Sarah has changed from the beginning, because right now she's the captain. She's the leader of the team. And I think that's going to have an impact more than anything else that the show has done with her so far, because now she's.
That's probably why I'm warming up to her.
It's I think so.
Because
yeah.
It was just like she really put me. And keep in mind, I didn't watch the first season.
Mm-hmm.
So the first episode was the premiere and stuff. Yeah. And I was like, wow, you're really doing that with this character?
See, that was out of character for her. That whole thing with Queen Anne.
And that got me off to a bad start. I was just like, I don't care about this. Why are you showing me this? You're doing this just to be salacious.
Yeah, they did Goofy Sarah as opposed to League of Assassins Sarah, Ninja Sarah.
If I were to die and then be resurrected and have somebody say, welcome back to being alive again, we're going to start sending you on missions through time, I would probably sleep with whoever let me sleep with them.
Let's just say I'm not really judging. You know, I'm not judging because, yeah, like Dustin said, it's just like, hey, if you've got the opportunity, you know. But the thing is that it was just the way that it was handled, and it was handled in a way it was presented as salacious.
Yeah, but
she's not part of her character.
Yeah, she's a much better character than that scene gave us.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, I mean, I'm, you know, to your characters be true, you know, and they weren't true to her there. But no, it's she's grown on me. But the whole. Just the camaraderie of the team, I enjoy. I love the big guy. I love him.
Mick
just
Rory.
Love him. Yeah. But still, it's Brandon Routh. Just, I love that guy. I love that guy.
I like when he wakes up from the virus and he's on top of Professor Stein. He goes, Professor, was I just trying to kiss you? And he does it this.
Brandon Routh got such a bad rap. Like,
oh yeah, yeah.
The Superman
for things that were just not his fault.
Yeah, not his fault. And then, like, because I really fell in love with him. He was on this just terrible sitcom. What was it called? I can't even remember. It was so bad. But he played the boyfriend. Like, it was about two couples, one gay couple and a straight couple, and the two guys were best friends, and one had a boyfriend and one had a girlfriend. He played the boyfriend.
I think I remember seeing promos for that. And, that was after Superman.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And he was, like, he was hilarious on the show, and he was hilarious in that – he was that character, like, you know, I don't understand what humor is. Like,
yeah.
So that made him so funny. And, like, he would do stuff like – he'd say stuff like, well – it's almost bedtime, so I guess I've got to go do 250 crunches. And he just, like, turn around and walk out of the room. And he'd just be like, did Brandon Routh?
He did fine in Chuck.
Oh, yeah.
He was fine in Chuck. So, yeah, I think he's just not been given.
I want all of our audience to go out, and I'm going to find it real quick here, but he did a short film that I saw at a film festival. And it was absolutely hysterical.
Yeah. Well, while you're looking that up, I will pitch. I will pitch our social media. We're on all of them. You can also share your thoughts with us. RoguesGallery@scififorme.com. I'm gonna throw that out there. Final thoughts, Tim, Anne, Catherine. Any of you have anything that you wanted to interject on any of the shows we haven't gotten to, real quick?
I was just going to say that I did not enjoy this episode of Legends of Tomorrow very much because there's so much you could do with zombies in Civil War, and I don't think they spent enough time on the zombies and more time on, you know, slavery was bad. And I wish they could have just not gone there and then just focused on the zombies. It was it seemed that kind of travesty deserves a weight to your narrative that I don't think they delivered on, and especially when you add the zombies in there, it was just like
zombies on a rowboat.
But what? The zombies, so, yeah, but see, the thing about it is, though, the zombies fit into that goofballery that we've been talking about for the season.
Yeah, no, see, that's what I wanted. I wanted that goofballery, and then you're like, oh, you know, we're going to throw in, you know, how, like, look at how, you know, the all this stuff that slaves went through, and it's just like, this is messing with my vibe.
I thought it was a decent counterpoint. I think it was a good compare and contrast.
This episode wasn't as good to me as the last one. I think a lot of that just has to do with, I just don't like zombies.
Yeah.
I just don't like them.
They're overplayed.
And I was never a fan of zombies to begin with. And then they became so mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And
Tim?
I just, from listening to you guys every week talk about Arrow, I'm glad I'm reading the comic now and didn't pick up the TV show.
Yeah, read the comic. The comic's so good. I love Emiko.
It is fantastic. My favorite. Black Canary and Green Arrow together.
Yep.
Do you guys remember the early 90s, I think it was, late 80s, early 90s?
Hey, gang, remember the 90s?
You know, mature readers, Green Arrow.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
That was so good.
My Grell.
Yeah, that was so good. And I don't know if it was just because I was, like, young and feeling like I was reading something I shouldn't, you know?
Did Grell do the Longbow Hunters?
Yes.
Is that in that,
is that
run?
Yeah, that was it.
That was a great... Like, I...
And this is great.
Always kind of enjoyed his character just because he was always a second rate Batman.
Yeah.
But he was pretty no nonsense, and he was, now granted, on a different character on Just League Unlimited, but he was great on Unlimited.
Did you find that short?
Yeah.
Yes, I did. The short is called Cost of Living. It is a science fiction short. It's basically two guys who work for this, you know, giant, you know, basically the evil, you know, umbrella corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever they've been working on, you know, has broken loose. And it's just these two guys played by Brandon Routh and Brett Harrison. And they are just going through killing all of these things. And they're having this banter between them about how they got to get to Nebraska. It's like, do you think we can get transferred to Nebraska? By the way, Brandon Routh talks like Batman through the entire thing, and it is hysterical. And the computer's voice is played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead. I know she has fans, but it's a great short film that I saw. I saw it first at the Omaha Film Festival, and yeah. I've seen it at a few film festivals since then. It's one of my favorite short films that I've seen at a festival, just because it caught me so off guard. And stick around at the end of the credits, because it's not an end tag, but it's a joke in the credits that's about what happens to them.
Well, I just got a text from Tim Harvey.
Oh yeah,
and apparently we've got a lot of people dialed in through the laptop, and apparently we can't hear him. He's been trying to make his points, and he says he's been trying to interject, but he can't get in. So
does he just keep saying, "Why is everything Kendall say so stupid?" Is that what he's saying?
That's what I say.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So I don't know how we fix that without completely stopping everything and rebooting. He says yes, that's what he's been saying. Yes. So
you can text me, jerk.
All right. So that's going to do it for us this time around. We're going to wrap up and head out. If you have your thoughts and comments on any of the DC shows, or if you want to share with us what you think about the Wonder Woman trailer, your expectations for that movie, let us know. RoguesGallery@scififorme.com is the email. You can send a comment on all of the social media. And next week, we will start with Sidekick.
Watch it.
And then go from there. So I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. Catherine Sanders.
Hi.
Ann Labs.
Good night, everyone.
Tim Harvey, who can't respond. And here in the studio, Dustin Adair.
Meh.
And Kendall Sen.
Good night.
And our thanks to Trinaya for her contributions earlier. Sonia had to bail for reasons. So that's going to do it for us. On behalf of all of us here at Sci-Fi for Me, I am Jason Hunt. Thanking you for listening. We will be back with another episode next week.
This has been a presentation of Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Copyright 2016 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.